This is The Blade and Beyond with the DC Dynamic Duo. Learn every detail about life on both ends of the knife. And now, live from Washington, D.C., your hosts, board-certified plastic surgeons, Dr. Michael Somanik and Dr. Troy Pittman.
Sunday, October 21st, or November 21st.
Oh my God, we're in a tough
I haven't even had a drink of my champagne yet. It's no. Sunday, November 21st. I am Dr. Troy Pittman. Welcome to The Blade and Beyond.
And I am Dr. Michael Somanik. And for those that are listening, we are doing a live recording with Instagram. So kind of the same thing we did last time, except we have the dogs with us this time. So who knows what's going to happen during this podcast episode.
Yeah, they may jump into the Insta Live at some point. Well, we had a week off. It's been 2 weeks since we've done the podcast.
I was going to say, we worked last week.
Yeah, we were working, but we didn't do the podcast last week. So a lot has happened in the last 2 weeks. We're in Miami for our friend's wedding this weekend. Michael and Lars, congratulations. They had a beautiful wedding at the Spanish Monastery here in Miami, which is a beautiful space. And you're very into the history of the Spanish Monastery.
Oh my gosh, I read up about it. I'm surprised you weren't really that into it, but it was so fascinating, and I won't bore everyone with it, but it came from Spain, obviously, and they took in the early 1900s, it's been built for like hundreds of years, and they disassembled it and shipped it to the United States in like 1950.
In brick by brick.
Brick by brick, literally. And if you see this thing, it's pretty massive. And they had it in like 11,000 crates or something. And the guy went bankrupt when...
William Hearst
went bankrupt when it got to New York. And so years later, in like 1952, I think, two entrepreneurs took that project on and they reassembled it with obviously a very comprehensive team in North Miami. And it is gorgeous. And I can't imagine what kind of jigsaw puzzle it was to put it together.
Yeah, it was a beautiful wedding. It was semi-outdoors and there was a deluge right at the beginning. And the grooms were so calm about it. I was tachycardic.
Well, you were coming undone.
I was so nervous for them. I think I would have been in a ball in the corner crying if it was my wedding.
Yes. You needed a Xanax, but we got through it, and it was a beautiful wedding. The rain stopped for the dinner, and it was just a light breeze, and I mean, it was a beautiful night, so congratulations to them again.
Okay, so we're going to jump right into it. Today, we're going to be talking about male plastic surgery, and what we've seen really over, I would say, the last 2 or 3 years is a real increase in requests for men who are wanting plastic surgery procedures. And I think part of it is, I don't think men have ever been less interested in plastic surgery. It's just that it was kind of a quiet thing and men didn't really want to talk about it. And they thought plastic surgery was for women. And the media has really picked up male plastic surgery topics. Men are talking about it more. They're talking about it more with their friends. And they're coming in because men want to look good.
Well, I think also what's happening is men are seeing their significant others, whether it's their husbands or their wives, looking better.
And they're getting jealous.
And you know, there is something to be said about looking good in the workplace. And I have many male patients that come in and say like, listen, I'm in my 50s and a bunch of people that work for me are in their 20s and early 30s. And I really, not that they want to look 20 or 30, but they want to look a little bit more like how they feel.
Well, there's a lot of research to show that men who look more youthful or more rejuvenated do better in the workplace, as far as getting jobs, promotions. I mean, that is really what it is. Our practice, I think, is unique, though, because for most plastic surgery practices, it is, I would say, 90% women, 10% men. And our practice is not 50-50, but it's definitely more like 70-30, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, it's more 70-30, sometimes 60-40 on a given week. Mm-hmm. But I think in general, that is in line with what's happening nationwide and perhaps worldwide with males. They're just seeking more treatments It's not all surgery. There's plenty of non-surgical procedures that men are seeking. And so we want to talk a little bit about it and demystify it for those men that are listening that potentially are thinking about doing these things, or ones that already are into it and are looking for additional treatments or anti-aging things. So let's get into
so
it.
So ladies that are listening, grab your husbands, bring them into the room. Men that are listening, grab your husbands, bring them into the room. The biggest thing I think in my practice that I see men for is gynecomastia or man boob surgery. And this can be treated with taking out. So what gynecomastia is basically increased fat or glandular tissue. Traditional gynecomastia is increased glandular tissue in the chest. And it's something that most guys, they identify at puberty. And as soon as their hormone levels change, they start with hypertrophy or growth of the glandular tissue. Mm-hmm. And it's something that has bothered them. When I see men in their 40s, it's something that's bothered them their whole lives. Now, pseudogynecomastia is more fat that is in the chest, which can come with weight gain, normal aging. But basically, we can treat gynecomastia with taking out the gland tissue through a small incision in the areola, or we can do liposuction. And traditionally, liposuction wasn't as effective at removing glandular tissue because the glandular tissue is very rubbery. But with vaser, which is an ultrasound type liposuction,
which heats
the glandular tissue and really emulsifies it, we're able to get a nice result without making that incision on the chest. Oftentimes, we can get all of the glandular tissue out, and then that little tiny bit of glandular tissue right behind the areola, we can make a small incision and take that out.
And you don't have to be fat or overweight to have gynecomastia. You can be super skinny to have that.
Yeah, the dogs are going nuts. So bear with them.
We're just going to go with it.
The other surgery that we're seeing more with men is good old-fashioned liposuction. Mm-hmm. And there are men that are a little bit overweight who benefit from liposuction of the abdomen and the flanks. But thinner men, you know, that flank fat, there isn't a lot you can do to get rid of that. And that's something that I think most guys struggle with, is a little bit of fullness around the flanks.
You see a ton of men, even like personal trainers and stuff, that have really good bodies.
Absolutely.
They have the
fat
there.
And so doing liposuction or vaser liposuction is a great option for that. Obviously, men who have lost a lot of weight are also candidates for tummy tucks. Mm-hmm. We do a fair number of male tummy tucks, certainly not as common as female tummy tucks because men haven't been pregnant. But men who have that extra skin in the lower abdomen, we can do a full tummy tuck or even a mini tummy tuck where we take a little bit of skin from the bottom.
I want to go back to gynecomastia though. Well, here we go. And talk about the scar, because mm-hmm. if I was going to have that surgery, my concern would be, am I going to have a big scar on my chest?
Right.
That's going to show signs that I'd gynecomastia surgery.
And I think that traditionally, you know, I will make the incision right in the red part of the areola. And so that is almost, that's privileged tissue. It's kind of like the lips, where if you keep the incision within that red tissue, it heals very, very well. The thing that I worry more about with gynecomastia is over-resecting behind the nipple. And you get something called a saucer deformity, where there, instead of there being a puffiness to the nipple, there's a little pothole. And that is something that we work really hard to prevent, because we don't want to give men a contour deformity, because that's pretty stigmatizing.
Well, what if they get that? What are their options to get rid of it?
So the best thing to do is to prevent it. I'll try and leave a tiny nickel of tissue right behind the areola to keep the areola flush with the skin. But I see men who've had this procedure done elsewhere. They come in with that and we fat graft it. So we do a little bit of liposuction and we place that fat behind the nipple.
Put filler?
You can put filler, but generally you want something that's going to be a one and done type thing, rather than having them come back and have filler put in their nipple. So those are the body procedures for the most part. Obviously, arm liposuction, thigh liposuction, those are all on the table for men. But we're seeing more men, you're seeing more men for facial procedures.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about facelift in the second half of the podcast, but we see a lot of men for, what would you say the most common thing you see guys for the face?
I think injectables. I mean, because that is one of the things that people can get into a little bit easier without committing to downtime. It's for the most part pretty subtle. It makes them feel instantly confident and they can come in the office and be out in 30 minutes, not, you know, creating some distraction to their day and just get back to whatever they were doing.
Well, so, Botox is a gateway drug.
It is.
That's where we start usually with Botox.
But fillers, I mean, mm-hmm. the jawline for males and females, but males specifically, there's been several studies that have shown improvement in the confidence of males with a more prominent jawline. So because of some companies promoting the chin specifically, there's been a lot of media buzz about chin augmentation with jawline, with implants or fillers. And fillers is very attractive because, like I said, you come in and you can have a jawline right away and you walk out. Yes, it's temporary. It'll last 8 to 12 months in most people, mm-hmm. but it's something that you can just kind of say, oh, I'm going to do this today. And then you walk out and have it for a while. So it's very attractive, and I think that that's the main thing that men come in for initially. Once I get speaking to them, though, about like what we can do, because they're interested, you just mm-hmm. have to kind of coax them a little bit into the process, and we can get into laser resurfacing, how to make your skin more uniform with microneedling. So there's a variety of non-surgical treatments that
are very
easy.
Let's talk about surgery. So men coming in for surgery, I mean, I feel like I see a lot of guys coming in for submental liposuction.
Well, again, jawline.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking to define their jawline, and that's one component of it. Submental liposuction is something that we do in the office or in our procedure room under local anesthesia. You get a little pre-medication to relax you, but you're not under, you know, an anesthetic or an IV anesthetic. And it takes about 30 to 45 minutes to do. And it's pretty limited recovery and quite gratifying because even, like I said, to the point of your flanks, they will have personal trainers, people that are super fit, will have that submental fat.
Yep.
And want to get rid of it. And it's so gratifying to see them even at 1 week. Yes, you have to heal and you'll have a little bit of swelling in that area, but it looks so much better just to get rid of that submental fat and define your jawline.
Yeah, and I think that for men who are a little bit older, one of the most common procedures is an eyelid lift or taking that skin off of the upper eyelid, which is so powerful. It's one of those really delicate surgeries. I mean, I find that we don't want to feminize the eye. And so you have to be really careful about how much skin is taken off the upper lid because you don't want them to look like Kenny Rogers. Rest in peace, Kenny Rogers.
Barry Manilow.
All of these overdone eyes, which are really strange looking. But you also don't want to have heavy upper lids because it absolutely ages you.
Yeah, I had a male patient come in about maybe 2 months ago. And I did his eyes, and he came in because he was actually the first one. His wife was next after me, which is the exact opposite of what I would expect.
She wanted him to be the guinea pig.
She wanted him to be the guinea pig. So he said, yes, if this looks good, my wife's coming in to see you. And she did. But all he kept saying to me about 4 or 5 times leading up to the surgery, even in the pre-op area, was, I don't want to look like Frank Gifford. And so after he finally recovered, I said, you look great. The incisions have healed. And most importantly, you don't look like Frank Gifford.
And Frank Gifford is also dead. So
I know
I'm
all these people. But the problem is that we only really notice bad plastic surgery. And that's what we cling on to. Mm-hmm. We go, oh my God, is that what I'm going to look like? And so all these red flags and warning signs go off when people are seeking plastic surgery. Like, I don't want to be this.
Because that's what they see in the media. They see the extremes. Right. And we really go out of our way. You lecture all the time on the male aesthetic to make men continue to look like men. You know, I think that the mistake that surgeons make is they say, okay, I'm doing eyes on this male and I'm going to do the eyes exactly the way that I do the eyes on everyone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And or they're doing a facelift and they're going to do that exactly the way they do that on everyone. They're going to put filler in the same part of the face as they would on a female patient. And that does distort the aesthetic because men have different faces than women.
Yeah, they have a naturally heavier brow. They have a naturally heavier eyelid in most men. So you want to respect that and not over-resect or raise their brows too much because that will feminize them and make them look a little bit weird.
Yeah, and along those lines, that makes me think one of the things that drives me crazy with tummy tucks is I see men come in who've had tummy tucks from surgeons where they corset the abdominal muscles like they would in a female. And men have broader chests, sometimes are barrel chested. And then you give this man this little cinched waist and it looks silly.
Yeah, that must look weird.
We don't really need to do a lot of abdominal muscular work in men because men don't have a rectus diastasis or that separation that women get when they're pregnant. And so you want to keep men looking a little bit more boxy. You don't want to give them a Marilyn Monroe waist.
Some people want it, I guess.
Yeah. So it's really, whether you're talking about body or face, you want to respect the aesthetic. Now, for those of you that are watching on Instagram Live, we are seeing you. We see questions coming in. If you have questions about anything we're talking about, we're monitoring that as much as I can see.
I've got you covered.
Okay, good.
I'm watching.
So if you have questions, just write those in and we will address them.
Okay. So now we are going to go to our next segment, which is...
In the news.
So on the top of this week's news, for those of you that are watching, you can't see my laptop. The reason I'm looking away is because I have my little notes here. So I keep referring to that. So we have boosters for all. Well, adults.
Pfizer, Moderna, 6-month boosters, yep. Johnson & Johnson, 1-month booster.
What do you mean 1-month booster?
So, well, it's really a second dose of Johnson & Johnson, but they are in the FDA booster guidelines. They did include Johnson & Johnson. And so one of the interesting things I think about this, and I'd love to know for everyone who's watching on Insta Live, I'd love to know your opinion. You can either do a thumbs up, thumbs down, yes, no. One of the recommendations from our surgical accreditation body, they basically say we need to do everything we can to prevent doing surgery on someone who's COVID positive because it can affect their respiratory status, but it also exposes the staff. Now, we're lucky enough that all of our staff has been boosted. So we've done everything we can to keep the staff happy, healthy, and safe. In DC, tomorrow, the mask mandate is being lifted.
I know.
However, we're continuing with the mask mandate in the office. So the question is, should we have our surgical patients, should we make sure that they get boosted? So let's say a patient comes in and they were getting their second vaccination in February of 2021, and now they want surgery. Should we require that patient to get a booster before surgery? And so I'd really love to know what your thoughts are about that. And we'll continue to go on with the podcast and we'll wait for some of you to comment because this is a hot topic issue. Everyone has an opinion. So let's go on and talk about Megan Fox.
Well,
and
it
then
is always,
we'll watch
yes,
your...
It is always going to be a hot topic. So yeah. we realize that. And don't give any spoiler alerts for my next story.
I'm transitioning you.
Yes. So Megan Fox, you know, I'm always looking on like the alerts and all that on Google. And Megan Fox popped up on this week. And it was a celebrity that they're like, did she have plastic surgery? And it's kind of interesting to look at the progression of people over the years. And because they're a celebrity and because their public face is out there, you know, we see them year after year from 2004 to 2021. So from 2004 to 2021, she clearly had a nose job. And that's what the story was about. And maybe she's had two, maybe she's had three. I don't know. But it is sort of interesting to see the transformation of people. And you know, I wouldn't want my face to be chronicled like that, but you know, they are celebrities and that's it. So I think it's always interesting to sort of demystify it and make them real people because they are getting things done. They're not aging with olive oil, or most recently somebody made some comment about grapeseed oil, which, hello, is a bunch of BS. If that's the only thing you're using, you're lying. And I just can't stand that. And it just like makes my skin crawl because I know you're doing something else other than throwing oil on your face to look good.
Well, I thought it was really interesting. We watched the Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake documentary, which is really a documentary about the Super Bowl nip slip. And it's a whole documentary about that, which is crazy.
An entire hour.
But it was interesting to watch Janet Jackson's nose change. It got narrower, it got less projected, and then it got a little bit wider at the base, and then more less projected, and really she started to look like LaToya Jackson. You watch her face in that documentary from the time that she's a child to the time that she's 50 years old, you watch her face change. This is like a perfect example when you see it all in an hour.
Well, her hair kept getting bigger and her nose kept getting smaller. It was one of these like crazy things, but I loved it. I love Janet Jackson, so it was kind of fascinating for me to watch that. So anyway, what I wanted to share.
Someone's writing in here. Yes. I believe that if you and your staff are fully protected and the patient is partially protected, your limit of exposure is low. Couldn't agree with that more. I think when we're talking now about COVID patients or potential COVID surgical patients, it's really more to protect the patient. Because no one wants to have COVID and undergo general anesthesia because of the respiratory issues that exposes the patient to. But that's a great point. I mean, if they are two vaccines in and they didn't get their third vaccine, the chances that they're coming to the table sick is going to be lower. So I think that's a really good point.
Yeah, I agree. All right, we're closing out on the final home stretch of the podcast. And I wanted to talk about facelifts. And there's a lot to talk about, actually.
There's so much to talk about.
And we're probably not going to get to all of it, but...
And we want to hear your questions on facelift.
Yeah, I wanted to demystify it a little bit because, again, like we were talking about bad plastic surgery just a couple minutes ago, there's a ton of media out there that is showing bad plastic surgery, that windblown or windswept look where people just look like they're so pulled so tight. And people think that that is what a facelift is. Also, what they think of a facelift is that their entire face is being lifted.
And that they're going to have huge incisions.
Well, yeah, but I have people that come in for a neck lift. I consider that basically a facelift. And they'll say, well, I'm getting that, so I don't really need a facelift, do I? And I said, well, you do. The textbook, this is a facelift, the lower third of the face.
This is a brow lift. So.
Yeah, so I kind of call it what it is. Mm-hmm. If I'm going to raise your brows, I call it a brow lift. If I'm going to do your eyes, I call it a blepharoplasty, which is an eyelid lift. So I kind of break it down for people so they know exactly what they're getting. So the facelift itself is a procedure that targets the lower one third of the face. So the jawline, the jowl, which is that area that starts becoming heavy in the kind of like by the mouth area. And then the neck area, which has been such a big thing with the Zoom boom and people watching their faces fall on Zoom over the past year and a half to 2 years.
Or people sitting with their head down watching themselves and seeing all of this.
Yeah, so you really start appreciating the changes as you age in the laxity in your skin, the platysmal banding or the muscles that start hanging in the center of the neck, and then the heaviness to the face and secondarily volume loss.
Mm-hmm.
So the facelift itself... I designed the incision around the ear. Now, I did not invent that incision. It is an incision that really has shown just positive results. And there's a reason why we do it around the ear. But the thing about it is that it's designed around the natural creases. So it's not just like this straight line in front of your ear. It's actually kind of a curvilinear line in front of the ear, which to people is very frightening because they don't know what it looks like. But we show them photos of how beautiful that they heal. And then the rest extends behind the ear into the hairline. So it's kind of two vectors. If you think about it, you're raising the face in this vector this way, and then the neck has to get lifted in a different vector. And that allows us to redrape the skin, sew the muscles together that have separated, and also reposition a lot of the fat in the face that has fallen over time.
So let's talk a little bit about, and this is something that I hear patients ask all the time, how young is too young for a facelift and how old is too old?
This is such a trick question because It is. Yeah, you're trying to throw me in a trick bag. But it is one of those things that there's no right answer. So I have done a facelift or a neck lift on somebody as young as 38 years old.
It wasn't me.
No, it was not you. There's no confessional here. But I've done it on her because genetically she had extra skin. She had a lot of fat in the neck and liposuction would not have been sufficient for her. And I've done a facelift as old as 85 years old on somebody that she was a grandma. And she was like, I want to look good for my grandkids. And this is why I'm doing this. And she was healthy. I think that's the most important thing with elective plastic surgery, facelifts in general, is that as long as you're healthy, you don't have any outstanding medical problems or they're very well controlled, you're a good candidate for it because it's not a surgery where there's a lot of blood loss.
Right.
It's a very elegant surgery.
And you're actually not bedridden where you can't walk and you're going to get deconditioned.
Right. Yeah, you are up and walking later that night after your facelift, obviously taking it easy. But the other question that people have is this a painful procedure?
Mm-hmm.
And that is another tough question to ask or answer because pain is relative, but I will say more often than not, people will say it's really not that bad.
Yeah, because you're really lifting that skin. You're not operating really on muscles per se, other than the small muscles in the neck, and you're not operating on the bones. So it really is not a very sensate plane that you're working in, right?
Correct. I mean, you're basically lifting skin up, and then you're lifting the tissues, which really, they don't have a lot of pain receptors necessarily. They have sensation, so people get numbness temporarily afterwards. But other than that, that comes back. That's always a temporary thing. And I think the other thing that people always ask is a recovery. You know, when you look at it, they Google it. Dr. Google, you got to thank him all the time. But people read up on it and they see like 2, 3, 4 weeks they can't leave the house.
And everyone has a friend who had a facelift and they
had a bad
experience and a long recovery. And so everybody's different. But I would say on average, what would be an average recovery for your facelift patients?
I think 1 week where you're really chilling out. You come in, you get your stitches out in the front of your ear. That second week, you start kind of returning back to a little bit of normal function. You can kind of go to the store with your hair down. And then after that second week, you start returning back to a lot of normal things that you do. So you don't have to hide for 4 weeks. Early on, you can start even concealing it with a little bit of makeup after the incisions have healed. I always give you the green light for that, so I don't like people to do it prematurely.
Well, wait, here's a question. So a patient comes in and says, my daughter is getting married on May 1st. When should I have my facelift?
So I don't like to do anything crazy surgically to people within 3 months of a wedding where they are the main center of attention, a la the mother, the father, the bride, the groom. So that's my rule in general. And we sort of work back on their timeline with them to come up with a really nice plan so they feel comfortable with it. And then if there is anything that's a little prolonged healing for some reason, because, you know, some things are unpredictable, we have a time frame where we can deal with it comfortably. So the day of the wedding or the big event, they feel totally fine with it.
So a common question with men getting facelifts are, how do you deal with the beard?
That's a great question. And the incision is a little bit different in men than women. So it's more, rather than going behind this part, so it's called the tragus. And for those of you that are watching, it's sort of this like flimsy part of the that's in front of the ear. In women, we can put it behind the ear. In men that have heavy facial hair, I put the incision in front of that. And you would think, oh my God, that's got to be so obvious in a male patient since you can't hide it, they don't have long hair, etc. But it's quite the opposite. Men actually heal faster than women because mm-hmm. our skin's a little bit thicker. Mm-hmm. We have the sebaceous follicular hair within the skin. And so within 10 days, it is really difficult sometimes to even see that incision on them. And they can walk around with confidence that nobody's going to look at them and go like, oh, you had a facelift.
And then as far as combining facelift with other procedures, what are patients asking to combine?
You have to think of the face as sort of one composite unit, and it usually ages at the same rate. So your face, the lower face and neck, is usually aging at the same rate as your eyelids and the volume loss in your face. and even the cumulative sun damage that you've potentially had throughout your life. So texture, tone, all that stuff needs to be addressed. So I'll frequently do upper and lower eyelids, sometimes a brow lift if the eye is asking for that rejuvenation. And I am more and more encouraging people to do volume replacement in the form of fat grafting at the same time as their facelifts, because I really think it helps to balance their face out. And lastly, in over 90% of my patients, if they're the appropriate skin type, I recommend laser resurfacing.
Yeah.
Because they have superficial, like I said, sun damage, texture changes, and all that stuff just makes sense. And it doesn't really add anything to your recovery. And it keeps it within one recovery, which is the most important thing.
Yeah, I mean, laser resurfacing, I think, is so, so powerful because it really is treating complexion changes, sun damage, and things that also age patients. Someone's asking a question, are there any new technologies or surgical techniques with facelifts on the horizon?
You
want to talk about MyElevate?
Yeah, I don't really. So there's a technology out there that we don't have experience with yet, but I'm always looking for the newest technology, surgical, non-surgical, et cetera. And this is a non-surgical treatment of neck laxity. And again, it's not going to give you a surgical result, but it requires a very precise placement of a suture in the neck that you use with a light. And that's about all I can say about it, because it's a little bit more complex. You have to kind of see it to understand it. And this suture is a permanent suture, and it cuts the bands in the neck and also tightens the skin. So the photos I've seen from some well-respected plastic surgeons, there's a couple in the country that are doing it right now, are pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking into incorporating this into the practice. But again, I want to feel comfortable with it before I perform it on anyone. So it's going to take a little bit for me to get there, because I want to do a couple videos and trainings, etc. But we'll kind of do another podcast on this because I'm really interested in it.
Okay. So any other questions from any of the Instagram Live people on anything that we've talked about today? Opinions, now is your time. We're going to be back next week. We're going to be in Miami again. We're celebrating.
It's a lot of Miami.
Yeah, we're celebrating Thanksgiving in DC, and then we are headed to Miami to celebrate someone's birthday next weekend.
I'm turning 25, everyone. I look forward to all the birthday wishes.
All right. So if there's no other questions from our Instagram Live people, thanks so much for listening. For those of you that are listening to the podcast at home, we totally appreciate your support. We will be back next week. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
That's a wrap. Remember to share the podcast with your friends. Follow the docs on Instagram at SominicMD, at Dr. Troy Pittman, and at DC Dynamic Duo. To learn more about the procedures discussed on today's podcast, visit www.SominicPittmanMD.com. That's www.SominicPittmanMD.com.